Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur mittlerweile achten Folge von US-Wahlgelaber. Jetzt haben wir mal eine richtige Pause eingelegt.
Ja, der Lockdown hat jetzt auch unseren Podcast erreicht, quasi.
Ja, genau, aber das ist jetzt ja vorbei. Wir sind ausgeruht und voll motiviert.
Stimmt, deshalb gibt es jetzt ab jetzt bis zu Bidens Inauguration jede Woche eine Folge. Und zwar immer am, ja, wann denn eigentlich?
Also, die Inauguration ist, glaube ich, an einem Mittwoch. Ja, Mittwoch, 20. Jänner.
Trägt sich ja super mit deinem Berufsleben.
Ja, voll. Sehr gut sogar.
Na gut, dann sagen wir jeden Donnerstag und die letzte Folge am 21. Jänner.
Ja, klingt okay. Aber die Woche auch schon?
Klar, aber nur ein Shorty. Da kündigen wir das weitere Programm an, so eine Art Teaser-Folge quasi, also ohne Interview.
Ja, okay, das klingt eigentlich ganz gut. Und was machen wir heute, außer jetzt den Teaser anteasen?
Für heute haben wir einen echten Brocken am Start. Etwas, das viele, besonders junge Amerikaner beschäftigt, die sogenannte Student Loan Debt Situation, also Schulden, die Studenten aufgenommen haben, um ihr Studium zu finanzieren. Wir haben da ein paar Infos zusammengesammelt und dann kurz mit einem Betroffenen gesprochen.
Ja, also 1,7 Billionen Dollar an Student Debt gibt es in Amerika. Seit 2006 hat sich diese Zahl mehr als verdreifacht. Die durchschnittliche Höhe ist circa 32.000 Dollar und die meisten haben so zwischen 25.000 und 50.000 Dollar Schulden. Insgesamt zahlen 43 Millionen Amerikaner Schulden ab, die sie während ihres Studiums aufgenommen haben. Also so roughly 12% oder so der Bevölkerung. Und wenn man diese Zahlen hört, dann tut einem der ÖH-Beitrag wahrscheinlich gar nicht mehr so weh. Wobei, ein bisschen schon.
Speak for yourself, sage ich da. Und interessanterweise tun sich jene, die eher geringe Summen an Student Debt haben, sich am schwersten, ihn zurückzuzahlen. Nämlich wer 5.000 Dollar oder weniger schuldet, gerät öfters in Verzug als jene, die viel mehr zurückzahlen müssen, eben weil diese oft später weniger Einkommen haben.
Ja, daher gibt es halt auch mehrere Ideen, wie man das Problem angehen kann. Also einerseits ist halt die Rede davon, Schulden bis zu einer Höhe von 10.000 Dollar einfach zu vergeben, um eben genau jenen zu helfen, die die größten Probleme damit haben. Und ja, es klingt halt ein bisschen widersprüchlich, aber eben jetzt so als Beispiel, um es einfach besser zu verdeutlichen, jemand aus einer ärmeren Familie wird einfach nicht nach Harvard gehen, wenn er kein Stipendium bekommt. Und weil in Harvard zahlt man einfach pro Jahr 52.000 Dollar. Und das können sich dann nur Studenten aus reicheren Familien leisten. Die, die nach Harvard gehen, die haben dann zwar höhere Schulden, die tun sich dann aufgrund ihres familiären Hintergrunds aber viel, viel leichter, sie abzubezahlen. Ganz abgesehen davon, dass ein Harvard-Absolvent sich sowieso keine Sorgen machen muss, einen gut bezahlten Job zu finden.
Ja, und Corona hat natürlich wie viele andere Dinge auch die Rückzahlung der Student Debts beeinflusst. Deswegen hat die Trump-Regierung im März die Rückzahlung von Studentenkrediten ausgesetzt und bis September dann noch einmal bis Ende 2020 verlängert. Der Zinssatz wurde dabei auch auf Null gestellt.
Ja, vielen Amis reicht das aber trotzdem nicht. Vor allem progressiv linke Kandidaten wie Bernie Sanders fordern überhaupt schon länger, die Studentenschulden überhaupt zu tilgen. Also das heißt, der Staat würde einfach einspringen und die Kosten übernehmen.
Genau, die Frage dabei ist nur, wie leicht das wäre, weil die amerikanische Bundesregierung ist im Besitz von über 90% von Studentenschulden und diese einfach zu erlassen, würde vermutlich als Staatsausgaben gelten und deswegen wäre ein Beschluss im Kongress vonnöten. Ob das mit einem republikanischen Senat möglich sein wird, beziehungsweise in welcher Form, wird man sehen, aber ob das, ja.
Ja, ich glaube,
Ich habe meine Zweifel.
ich auch. Aber ich
Ja.
glaube, wir haben jetzt auch schon genug darüber gelagert und fragen lieber jemanden, der das amerikanische Bildungssystem aus erster Hand kennt, vor allem auch die Schulden. Und du hast da, glaube ich, mit einem Studenten an der West Virginia University gesprochen.
Stimmt, mit dem Andres Warren, den habe ich in Sevilla bei einem Auslandssemester kennengelernt. Von den Amis, mit denen ich dort über das Studieren gesprochen habe, hat es nur wenige gegeben, die fürs Studieren keinen Kredit aufgenommen haben. Und er war halt der gemütlichste von allen. Deswegen habe ich dann mit ihm über seine Situation gesprochen und darüber, was er sich von einem Präsident Biden in Hinsicht erhofft. Hello, Andres. It's nice to have you on our podcast today.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, so just to get into it, what exactly did you study?
So at college, I just graduated about 6 months ago, and I studied strategic communication. So it's like a mix of like marketing, advertising, and content creation. So it's a pretty creative major.
Okay, and since our topic today is about student debt, could you maybe tell us a bit about your situation regarding that?
Yeah, so with student debt, in the US especially, everyone has so much. Like the average, I think, is around $30,000 for debt, which is awful. So for me, I have about like two different loans that I took out. The good part is now they're not being as strict with having to pay for these loans, which is good. But it will take like on average probably like maybe 10 years just to pay off college debt, which seems a little bit crazy.
And I mean, how much of an issue is student debt on campus? Is it something that's talked about a lot?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely something that everyone's thinking about all the time, but you know, you just want to have fun in college. So it's on people's minds in the back, but I think there's around like 44 million Americans that have student debt right now. So it's sadly like the elephant in the room. It's just there all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that it's something you have to think about a lot while you're studying. So how much does it affect your life planning?
I would say in a good amount, depending on, you know, the person, like from person to person, but personally, like sometimes it's hard to be able to like pay for everything and then be focusing on, you know, this loan you have to pay in the future too. It's like for some people, like they have to pay rent and then they have to buy groceries. They want to go out to the bars, get food with friends. And then they're like, oh wait, I still have to save this money for my loan. So it's kind of just being very conscious about, you know, how you're spending your money at a young age, which is kind of hard sometimes when you just want to have fun with your friends in college, but it's manageable, I'd say.
Okay. Until when will you have paid off your complete student debt?
Probably until the day that I die. No, I'm kidding. I would say on average around probably 10 years. If the pandemic starts, you know, clearing up and there's more jobs available, probably in the next 10 years, I'm hoping.
Okay, and how much student debt do you have in total?
Let me think. I'd say between like 20 and 30,000 US dollars. So a pretty good amount.
Yeah, I mean, and on your university, how would you say is the situation on your university, like compared to the national average?
I'd say my university is a little bit lower than the national average.
The University of West Virginia, if I'm correct.
Yes, West Virginia University, Country Roads, Take Me Home, John Denver, all the way. But so I'd say it's a little bit below average because it's not a private school, so you don't have to pay as much. And there's a lot of in-state students. So in the U.S., it's like if you're in-state, which you like live in the state, it means that you get to go to the school for like half of the price, basically, that it would be for an out-of-state student. But most kids want to, you know, travel, get away from home. So they pay the out-of-state fee and then they might get more scholarships for something. But yeah, I'd say it's a little bit lower than the national average.
Yeah, I read it up. I think in West Virginia University, you pay in-state. That means if you're a resident of West Virginia, you pay $9,000 a year. And if you're from outside of West Virginia, you pay around $25,000.
Yeah, and it's such a big increase too, like the amount. For me, the reason I went out of state was because I just wanted to travel, you know, see the U.S. a little bit. And also here in high school, you take like the SATs or the ACTs, and it's like this score of like basically your intelligence from since you've been in school. And from that, if it's high enough, schools will give you like a certain amount of money because they want you to go there. So for me, I got like half my tuition paid for from my scores, which was really good. And that allowed me to be able to leave New York and go travel and go to a different school. So it pays to be smart, kids. Do your homework.
So let's maybe get away from the personal questions. I mean, now we're in December, and about a bit over a month ago, the U.S. elections took place. Yes. How closely did you follow the U.S. elections, and are you happy about the outcome?
I followed them very closely on all social media, watching news channels, but also making sure to watch news channels that aren't just solely like focus on like the Democrats or fully focus on like Republicans more, you know, like unbiased news. I definitely gotten, but I followed very closely. And I think it was a great turnout, specifically because of Kamala Harris, because she is, she's multiracial. She's a woman, and it's the first woman to be like elected as vice president. So for representation purposes, like, I think this was a great turnout for the election.
Okay, yeah, I thought that you were not disappointed about the outcome, to put it like that. And
absolutely.
And Joe Biden did promise, or yeah, he actually or said at least to cancel some of the federal student debt. And yes. What are your hopes about that?
I'm very much hoping for that, Marcus. He said, I think it was around like $10,000 that he would cancel for students.
Yeah,
and so
it would be a cap at 10,000.
Yeah, so I'm very much hoping that that is something that he upholds while he's in office. Maybe a little bit more money. I'm like, come on, guys, maybe 20,000, 30,000. But I'd say that it's definitely needed right now, especially because like I can attest that it's very hard to find jobs right now, especially for entry level positions, like people starting out their profession. Cause they kind of like a lot of businesses, companies, they just started canceling those entry levels because they realized, oh, we need to spend money in these places now that the pandemic has hit. So I say this is definitely needed from Biden, that little promise. He better uphold that.
And let's say if he doesn't uphold that, would you be very, how angry would you be on a scale of 1 to 10?
I would say definitely a little bit upset. I think that Generation Z and the millennials, especially the TikTok kids in America, would just have an uprising, and it wouldn't go well. I feel like one thing that our generation in the US is very good at is speaking up for, you know, what's right or what should be going on at the time. And if he doesn't uphold that, I think that there'll be a lot of, you know, voices being heard with him needing to like uphold that, because that could influence people's lives a lot. $10,000 not having to pay, like, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, but let's say he forgives some amount of student debt. I mean, the system that's in place would still be the same. Would you prefer let's say a free college system, like the one you studied in Europe for a semester, in Sevilla for a semester? Do you think there's something more important that needs to be done in the American education system than just forgiving student debt?
Oh, absolutely. That's a very good question. I would say that it definitely starts at the beginning. It's not just when you finish college. It should be from the start during college. Because I remember a few people like in Seville, like some of the German students would say that they go to school for like the year, or they go to the university, and in the summer they make like almost enough money to be able to pay off like for the next year. They have so much money saved up. And in the US, it's like, it's never like that. Like, I could make maybe $5,000 in the summer working, and then my tuition is $30,000. So that's definitely a big difference. The US has such like a capitalist approach to everything that even if you do cancel, you know, $10,000 worth of debt at the end of the day, like there's still going to be kids that have debt anyway. So they should start at the beginning of college. Like you should just be reducing tuition or maybe making it more accessible to win like scholarships so people could, you know, go to a different state for college and experience that.
And do you know people who said, okay, I would like to go to university, but I just can't afford it, so I'll start working right away. Is that very common?
Yeah, that is very common actually. So from my hometown, I think in my graduating class, there was probably maybe only 7 kids that actually left the state to go to college in different places. And a lot of kids, they go to like trading schools, they learn, you know, like hard machinery or like construction type work instead, because like solely because they can't afford it. So definitely needs to start at like something with the tuition rates or like, cause going to school, there's some schools, like one called Syracuse University that's near where I live back home. And it's, I think, $60,000 a semester to go to school there. I'm saying if you want to get your master's degree or you want to get a doctorate degree, like you're going to be paying off all that money. Like that's so much just for like trying to get an education, like, and better the world. I don't get why it's that expensive to be able to do that.
Yeah, and what options do people from or students from like families with lower incomes, what options do they have in the US, or do they have enough options in Europe, or is the US doing a good job in helping them to being able to attend a university?
Yeah, I think that it's pretty hard. I would say if you are of a lower income family, you basically have to try a lot harder than the average person. But yeah. So I would definitely say there needs to be more opportunities. We have something called FAFSA, which is like government money given to you if you, you know, don't have like both parents, or if you're like an independent or something. So that gives you financial compensation, but at the end of the day, like, it's not enough to be able to live, you know, 4 years on your own while paying for college. And so I think that the US, if things want to get better, has to start from like having cheaper tuition rates, just getting more people educated.
But nonetheless, are you optimistic about your career chances in the future?
I'm definitely optimistic about it. I think that with the new year coming and like the new fiscal year and everything, that there'll be more jobs starting to open up. And also with the first coronavirus vaccine in the UK, I think from a few days ago, that I'd say in the next, don't mark my words, but I hope in at least 5 to 6 months that things will be turning around a lot and, you know, the world will be getting back to more normal.
Okay.
I pray.
Okay, well, that's an optimistic final statement. I think we can leave it at that.
Yes.
Andres, thank you very much for your time and greetings to West Virginia.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Spannend. Danke nochmal, Markus, dass du das Interview geführt hast.
Bitte gerne.
Hast du diesen weisen Worten noch was hinzuzufügen?
Nicht unbedingt, aber vielleicht schauen wir noch kurz rüber in die USA, was sich dort gerade tut.
Ja, gern. Ja, wobei, geht eigentlich so. Es gibt nämlich aus meiner Sicht eine gute und viele schlechte Nachrichten.
Wir sagen die schlechten zuerst, dann gehen wir mit den guten raus.
Okay. Das Coronavirus fegt gerade quer durch die Staaten und ständig werden neue Höchstwerte erreicht, also und zwar sowohl was die Todeszahlen als auch die Neuinfektionen betrifft.
Schlimmer als bei uns?
Jein, also ich meine, schlimmer als bei uns kann man sich eigentlich kaum vorstellen. Österreich steht eigentlich ziemlich schlecht da. Aber in den USA sterben gerade pro Tag etwa 3000 Menschen nach einer Infektion mit dem Coronavirus. Das wären in Österreich so um die 85. Wie gesagt, Österreich steht so schlecht da wie sonst kaum wer. Bei uns sterben um die 100 Menschen täglich am oder mit dem Coronavirus. Aber nach dem Lockdown sind jetzt unsere Neuinfektionszahlen einfach deutlich niedriger. Das heißt, in den USA ist einfach kein Ende dieser steigenden Todeszahlen in Sicht. Und man muss dann jetzt noch daran denken, die Neuinfektionen wirken sich in der Regel so in 3 bis 4 Wochen erst auf die Todeszahlen aus.
Gut, also man kann davon ausgehen, dass das ein Thema bleibt.
Ja.
Aber du hast doch eine gute Nachricht versprochen.
Ja, das stimmt. Trump blitzt mit seinen Versuchen, die Wahl für ungültig oder manipuliert zu erklären, bei allen Gerichten ab.
Also kann man sagen, das war's für ihn?
Nein, natürlich nicht. Er wird es einfach so lange probieren, wie es nur irgendwie geht. Der Donald hat sogar schon eine Gegenveranstaltung für die Inauguration von Biden angekündigt.
Was, wirklich?
Ja, kein Witz. Er möchte laut Medienberichten damit sozusagen seine Election Campaign für 2024 einläuten. Und das heißt, bei unserer letzten Folge können wir wahrscheinlich gleich über 2 Events labern.
Bist du wahnsinnig? Also wir leben echt in spannende Zeiten, kann man sagen.
Ja, Aber die werden jetzt ja besser. Immerhin gibt es uns jetzt wöchentlich.
Stimmt, und die nächste Folge schon am Donnerstag. Also stay tuned.
Auf Wiederhören.